the Court of Appeals. This hearing is by Zoom. And if at any time you are unable to hear or some cut out or something, please raise your hand or let us know so that we can stop the clock and make sure that we're hearing all of your arguments. And with that, I'll have the marshal call the case, please.
Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Riley, Judge Cochran, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Denise D. Riley presiding. The first case is A22-0020, Ryan Carlson versus Township of Livonia.
And as I said, good morning and welcome to the Court of Appeals. This hearing will be conducted as if we were at MJC. You each will have 15 minutes with 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please state your name for the record, and it is being recorded. Will be posted on our website within a day or two, I think. And with that, is attorney for the appellant ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jevin Binman, and I represent the appellants, Ryan and Tanya Carlson. In this appeal, this court must determine whether the district court erred by concluding the Carlsons and the public share riparian rights to the shoreline of Lake Fremont that is adjacent to the Carlsons' property. In the first appeal of this case, decided over 13 months ago, this court determined that the Carlsons were entitled to summary judgment on their claim seeking exclusive riparian rights. The township now seeks yet another bite at the same apple. The district court's conclusion that the Carlsons share riparian rights with the public is erroneous for two reasons. First, this court already determined that the Carlsons have exclusive riparian rights, so the district court's contrary ruling is precluded by law of the case. Second, the dedication of 120th Street shows no express or implied intent to confer riparian rights to the township on behalf of the public. This court should therefore reverse the decision of the district court and remand with instructions to grant summary judgment on count two of the Carlson's complaint in its entirety. Now I'll start with the procedural issue. And the way that the township would like to set up this case is that in the first appeal, the Carlson's, the court determined whether the Carlson's have riparian rights at all and left undecided whether the extent of those rights. But in actuality, The first Carlson 1 court determined the extent of the party's riparian rights in their entirety. And this is shown by several different ways.
Mr. Binman, would you agree that the bulk of the first opinion dealt with who had fee title and if there were easements with regard to the street? As I read the opinion, that seems to be the focus.
I would agree that the focus of the issues was the fee title. And the reason for that was because that is the issue that the parties decided to use in order to show fee title ownership and also riparian rights. So both parties made a decision that their strongest argument was that they had a fee title to the land, and under longstanding Supreme Court precedent, fee title generally determines ownership, riparian rights. Now, nothing prevented the township from making the argument that they had a riparian rights due to the easement over 120th Street. And in fact, they did make that argument to the district court. They could have made that argument to the Court of Appeals as well. They chose not to. And the Court of Appeals expressly held that the Carlsons were entitled to summary judgment on count two. Count two of the complaint, which is in our addendum, specifically requests exclusive riparian rights. So,
if I understand the platting, the boundary of the street that's closest to the lake is the lakeshore. That's how it looks to me on the maps. Would you agree with that?
I would agree on the plat that the boundary of 120th Street is the lakeshore. Yes.
And so then if this court determined that your clients had fee title to the street, but that the town had an easement to the street, if we were to say to hold that your clients had exclusive right to the exclusive riparian rights, wouldn't that be contrary to our case law? For instance, Village of Wayzata versus Great Northern Railroad Company?
It wouldn't, Your Honor, and here's why. So as you just noted, the boundary of 120th Street and the lake is the lake. Now in Village of Wayzata, the court expressly noted that the road curved into the lake and that the lake itself was inside the boundary of the water. Whereas here we have a demarcation between the road on one side and then the lake. So that's an important distinction. And the Supreme Court's holding in Village of Wayzata was that it granted public riparian rights because the road went to the lake, went into the lake. And that that holding has been further clarified or discussed in Bryant and even the Schussler case that the Court of Appeals decided last year, where you have a road
well,
that
is- Well, what about the McLafferty case? The McLafferty case tells us that when a property owner has fee simple and the city has an easement in a street adjacent to the lake, riparian rights are shared.
Well, Your Honor, the holding in McLafferty was that the question there was whether the city had exclusive riparian rights. And the court correctly determined in that case that the city did not have exclusive riparian rights. The scope of the property owner's rights was not at issue in that case. So the Court of Appeals in a long discussion noted that the property owner has certain riparian rights, but it didn't have to reach the question of whether the property owner's riparian rights were exclusive. So because the scope of the city's rights was not at issue, any discussion of shared riparian rights is dicta. And the Court of Appeals even cited a case from Maryland in which the city did not have any riparian rights. So it didn't foreclose that possibility. It just, that question was not at issue in McLafferty.
Counsel, regardless of our holding, it seems to me riparian rights in this case are a moving target because for some reason the township approved a plat that had a movable boundary on its west side, that being the actual shoreline of the lake. It seems like in dry years, the road might not even be within the easement and would be owned then, I suspect, by your clients. And in wet periods, the road, the water could be on the other side of the road. So how do you manage riparian rights in a situation like that? I mean, I can't understand in the modern day why anyone would have approved that plat, but that's a whole different issue.
Well, Your Honor, the important point is that the demarcation of the easement is the lake. So in other words, according to the plat itself, you could walk the whole width of 120th Street walking along the easement and you would never reach the lake. And that is contrary to Village of Wayzata, for example, where if you walk along within the scope of the easement, you would eventually walk into the lake. That is not possible under the plat. And that is the holding that.
Can you help me though? The plat map that I was looking at showed the edge of the water as being, on one side of it. So I guess I'm not clear on how you can be walking along and not be near the lake, or maybe I'm not quoting you exactly, but.
Well, certainly you can be near the lake, but.
It looks like it's on the edge of the lake though. It shows that you have 120th Street Northwest and one side of it is the edge of the water. So I guess I'm not clear on how this is really distinguishable from the Wayzata case.
Well, the question here is intent. What was the dedicator's intent in dedicating 120th Street? And Supreme Court case law has shown that when the easement allows the public to actually go into the lake as opposed to just walking walking alongside the lake. That is when riparian rights attach. And here, the purpose of this easement is to traverse between the various parcels in the plat. It does not actually lead you to the lake. If you walked the entire length of 120th Street, your feet wouldn't get wet because the road and the lake are not connected in any way. So that's the distinction here between Village of Wayzata and those cases versus what we have here.
Well, how are they not connected if it's on the edge of the water?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
You said the road and the lake aren't connected, but it says the dotted line in the map shows the edge of the water. So I guess I'm not clear on your statement that they're not connected.
Well, the point is that Village of Wayzata requires the easement to go into the lake itself. And if you look at the plat for Village of Wayzata, which is cited,
can you quote the language from Village of Wayzata that you're relying on for that proposition?
I can certainly paraphrase it. The court determined that when the grantor dedication is for the purpose of passage and goes to the water, then the dedication was intended to enable the public to get to the water. So here we don't have a situation where it goes to the water. The road goes alongside the water.
Mr. Binman, I don't think you want to quote the intention of the grantors in this case, in your case.
I'm sorry?
Because it seems that the town, it seems to me that the township and the people who platted, the developer who platted this, and the township made it clear, if we were to look at those records, that they agreed that your clients would not have the right to put a dock on the lake, and that the purpose of keeping 120th there was so that the public could continue to use it the way they had always used it.
Well, the court in Carlson 1 determined that the plat was unambiguous, and that the testimony or evidence of what the plat dedicators may have intended but didn't put into the plat itself was parole evidence that would not be considered. So all we have here is what the plat shows. And what the plat shows is...
And Carlson 1 determined that the plat showed that your clients had fee title and the city had an easement, right? I mean,
an easement
that's
to
the holding of the case.
Correct, an easement to the street.
I was going to ask you about your due process argument and how you preserve that below.
Well, the Carlsons preserved that below in the only way that was possible based on how this came about. And so when the case was remanded to the district court, there was a hearing to discuss moving forward on the claims that were remanded, which was claims 3 and 4, which are not at issue here. And both the Carlsons and the township made clear that the issue of riparian rights was no longer at issue. So then the court requested the Carlsons to provide a proposed order, which they did. The township then provided an unsolicited proposed order advocating for the shared riparian rights. So when that happened, Carlsons objected. And then after the district court adopted the township's proposed order in its entirety, the Carlsons brought a request for reconsideration, which was denied. And in the request for reconsideration, they expressly asked for the opportunity to be heard on that issue of shared riparian rights. So there really wasn't anything else that the Carlsons could have done to preserve that issue.
Council, though, isn't it true, given the description here, that the township's right-of-way interest was 33 feet, and that would have begun on the shore of the lake and proceeded inward 33 feet, which would mean there's probably a few feet on the lakeside of easement till you hit the actual road and a few feet on the other side, assuming this is accurate, which I can't understand how it could be when the shoreline's moving all the time. But at any rate, doesn't that easement suggest in the way water moves that at times or it's going to be connected to the lake just by the nature of what happens with the lakeshore? I mean, it doesn't stay static. It goes up and down.
Well, Your Honor, again, we have to rely on what the plat actually shows. And here the plat shows that there's an easement to the road, and then the water water is on the other side of that easement. The court in Carlson 1 concluded that the township had an easement to the street. There's nothing in the plat that unlike cases cited by such as Schaller or Baldwin, which we cited in our brief, that showing that there was any express dedication of riparian rights here. I see I'm out of time, so I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. And you all have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Attorney for the respondent, are you ready to proceed?
I'm ready to proceed, Your Honor. May it please the court, Bradley Clutcher of Barnegussy and Stephan on behalf of the respondent, the Township of Livonia. The Township of Livonia has riparian rights as part of its easement in 120th Street, and the court did not previously determine whether Livonia Township had riparian rights in Carlson 1. As a result, the district court did not abuse its discretion in ruling that the Township of Livonia had those riparian rights that it shared with the Carlsons. First of all, as the court noted in its questioning, under Minnesota law, when there's a road that runs along a public body of water or runs to that public body of water, the township and municipality gets riparian rights with their easement, which is then held in trust for the public use. Those riparian rights then can be used by any members of the public. And the case law, including the Village of Wayzata, which originally recognized these rights, and the case of McLafferty, which more recently recognized those rights again, held that these riparian rights continue to exist. And the reason for that is set forth in the case.
Before you get to that, would you please address Mr. Binman's argument that the law of the case is that counts 1 and 2 of their complaint have been dealt with? And in particular, I'm looking at, I'll call it Carlson 1, the first opinion from the Court of Appeals, page 18 in the middle of it, says, therefore, the district court erred by denying the Carlson's motion for summary judgment and granting the township's motion for summary judgment related to counts 1 and 2 of the Carlson's complaint. What are we to do with that language? Why isn't that the law of the case here?
Certainly, Your Honor, there's two reasons actually that it's not establishing that the Carlsons have exclusive riparian rights. First of all, in the opinion itself, the court does not say that summary judgment should be granted giving the Carlsons exclusive riparian rights. It just says the district court erred. And the reason the Court of Appeals said that the district court erred.
You would agree that count two, Mr. Clutcher, you would agree that count two of their complaint requests exclusive docking rights, exclusive riparian rights.
Count two does request exclusive riparian rights, but the language that the Court of Appeals used right before that previous sentence says that these cases all stand for the general rule that the legal effect of a plat dedication, here, because the district court erred in concluding that the Carlsons did not own fee title to the street, the district court improperly determined that the Carlsons do not have riparian rights to the lake. And they did not say that they erred by finding that they did not have exclusive riparian rights. So the key to the decision was the fee title issue. And the court was saying, because the court erred on the fee title issue, we have to remand this case to the district court for it to determine the rights that exist. And once it's determined that the township doesn't have the fee title. And the reason for that is because one of the arguments that was made in the lower court in the alternative was if it was just an easement that the city had riparian rights related to it. But the district court never had to reach that issue because the district court determined that fee title belonged to Livonia Township. And that's important because this court does not determine issues that were not reached by the district court. That's why you remand it to the district court so the district court can first determine those rights. And that's why this court remanded this matter to the district court for the district court to make a determination. And that is borne out by the language of the decision itself, where earlier in the decision, the Court of Appeals indicates that the Carlsons argue they had exclusive riparian rights. But when they actually made the ruling on page 18, the Court of Appeals did not call them exclusive rights. It just called them riparian rights. As a result of that, the Court of Appeals never reached the issue of exclusive riparian rights. And from a practical side, that just makes sense because they want to give the district court an opportunity to rule on that in light of the Court of Appeals ruling that the township doesn't have fee title and just holds an easement. And as the court noted, the case law in Minnesota long since the 1800s has been that when a township or city gets this easement with a street that goes along the water or to the water, they get riparian rights. And so to hold otherwise would have been a long departure from what that case law provided. So in this particular case, the Court of Appeals reversed and remanded. It did not give any specific instructions to the district court on what exactly they were to do. As the Jansen case teaches, that gives the district court discretion to determine what issues are they are to do as long as they don't act inconsistently with the Court of Appeals opinion. And because the Court of Appeals opinion does not say the Carlsons have exclusive riparian rights, the district court was within its discretion to determine whether the township of Livonia had riparian rights that are shared with the Carlsons as the case law provides. Your Honors, the case law is in Minnesota is the way it is for a very important reason. And that's spelled out in the In re Baldwin decision. In In re Baldwin, the court talks specifically about why riparian rights are so important. And I say this, and I want to quote this language because it's important that the court recognize what the courts in Minnesota have continually recognized. And the court said, if the court should create a precedent by permitting a single inroad, however small, upon the public share of the shoreline, other inroads will inevitably follow until the aggregate becomes a real threat to the public's free access to the lake. To avoid any possibility of such result, the court should, with equal vigor, repulse the first, the second, and every other assault upon the public domain. And this case, In re Baldwin, specifically recognized the rights of townships and towns in having riparian rights when they had a street easement. And that's why it's so important in Minnesota.
I'm going to ask both you and Mr. Binman this question. A lot of the case law that we're looking at, as you indicated, goes back to the 1800s. And sometimes when case law is that old, we will put out a precedential opinion just to bring things more current, maybe to update the language a little bit. Do you think that this case should be made precedential? And if so, what would your syllabus point be?
Your Honor, I do think it should be made precedential, and I do think that what it should be made precedential is recognizing that when an easement is granted for a street, that it comes with riparian rights. and to make that clear so that we're not facing these kind of arguments again.
Counsel, on my concern that by the plat designating the edge of the lake as one side of the 33 feet, that you're always going to have a moving target. Do you see that as a concern?
I don't, Your Honor. And I when you asked that question, I actually was trying to find the case because I remember reading in one of the cases in preparation for this, that edge of water references the movement of the from the low, all the way down to the low water mark, so that you never have a gap. And that's why the word edge of water is used as a term of art to establish that that boundary will always be where the water is. But I couldn't find it in my quick look here as I was trying to listen to Laurel's argument and find it. So well, I apologize for that. But I know it's in one of these cases. I can't put my finger on it.
Well, when I used to do plats, and I did a lot of them in the late 70s after the motto ordinance for counties was established in 75, my understanding was that the road authority, when someone was going to plat a property with a road, always required a 66-foot easement, not a two-rod road. Now, I understand that the two-rod road existed there, but it would have been my experience that since the developer owned the inland part of that, that most townships would have wanted a 66-foot road because just for maintenance purposes, 33 is almost impossible, and that's maybe why this is a minimum maintenance road. But don't you think we're talking about a moving target? If the lake shore is down, the road might actually exist, you know, on the lake bottom, not on its current location. And if the lake is high, the road may technically exist on the other side of the road, inland into the property owners. As far as the easement is concerned.
If you look at the plat, Your Honor, there's a solid line that runs along where the lot lines are for the property owners, including the Carlsons, that specifically designates where the boundary is on their property. The dotted line is the edge of the water line, which moves as the water moves down below. And that was the intention of it, so it would move as the water mark moved down, and that's why they used edge of water.
But then it could run anywhere from 33 feet to less than that or to greater than that, depending on where the water line was. I mean, the easement's still 33 feet.
Right. But I mean, the easement amount they say is going to be the 33 feet, but the actual edge of water line can expand that down or make it more narrow. That's why they use the dotted line, because it can move.
Usually, in my experience, in the DNR's approach on these, you use the ordinary high water mark and draw a permanent line there. And then have this issue of things going up and down.
Yeah, I've seen that before, too, but that wasn't the case in this particular instance, because it's using the dotted line and moved as the edge of the water. And I don't know. I wasn't involved at the time. I don't know exactly why that was done. I do know there was a provision in the development agreement that specifically said that they wanted a quitclaim deed to make sure that there was no remnant parcels. So, and that was provided.
But isn't the definition of the public's interest in a lake from the ordinary high water line down? So that it doesn't
that is what
property
that is.
Until that point or at that point.
No, you're right. It's from the navigable, the water gut line goes all the way up to the high water mark. Yes, the public has a right to that when they're on the water. This is talking about getting to the water from the land. So slightly different, because one's coming from the water up and one's coming from the land down. And that's why they use the edge of water.
Yeah. Okay.
Your Honor,
one question following up on Judge Kirk's questions. So you indicated that your interpretation of the plat is that the edge of water indicates the low water mark as the water moves back and forth. Then is this case distinguishable from the Village of Wayzata case for the reasons argued by Mr. Binman, that the court in that case intended its application to be limited to situations where the street goes into the water, goes to the water?
It does not, Your Honor. And the reason for that, if you look at the plat and the drawing in Village of Wayzata, the actual drawing in the case itself shows the road running right along the water's edge, which is the same that we have here. The water's running on the water's edge. And so because of that, that same decision applies in this case. Plus, it's been recognized over and over again in the Schaller case, where you're dealing with the Frontiac Point. It's recognized there. If when you look at the Schlusser case and you look at the Bryant case, they're all getting to the same point, which is when you have a easement that runs along the water, it's intended to give riparian rights so that the public can access the lake. And that's exactly what you're dealing with in this particular instance. And, you know, if you read Tim Edgerton's affidavit from the Minnesota DNR, he specifically talked about the fact how the public uses this for access to the lake and had been doing so for a long period of time. And in fact, that's why the DNR, when you seek to vacate a road, gets noticed, because they come in to assert the state's rights related to public access to get into the property. Your Honors, I see my time is just about up. I'm asked that the court affirm the decision of the district court and find that riparian rights exist for the Township of Livonia. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Binman, you have the final word.
Thank you, Your Honor. To start with the law of the case issue, the court said what it said. It said that the Carlsons are entitled to summary judgment on count two of the complaint, and that count sought exclusive riparian rights. Now, the township knew that that's what the Carlsons were seeking, and they could have made this argument as to shared riparian rights. They chose not to, and maybe they thought that the fee title argument was stronger, but now we have a situation where we have a second appeal, piecemeal appeals, and no finality of the appellate court judgment, which is exactly what law of the case is intended to prevent. And moreover here, if you look at the final footnote of the Carlson 1 court, they remanded counts 3 and 4 to the district court for further opinions. They did not remand count 2. And in fact, they said, because this court has found that the Carlsons own fee title and riparian rights, we will be remanding these other issues for further consideration. So the Carlson 1 court clearly intended for count 2 to be fully decided. Now, and under the Mattson case and other cases, the township can't then go back and create a new argument to bring that argument back into the case. On riparian rights, the township cited the Baldwin case, and just briefly about that case, that was a vacation case. It was not determining the riparian rights of the parties. And moreover, the Baldwin case relies exclusively on Schaller, and Schaller was an express riparian right case. In the Schaller plat, it stated that the public had riparian rights to the lakeshore. It had those words. Now in Baldwin, we don't know what the dedicator did. We don't know what the plat looked like. There was no map. There was no discussion of the plat. The court, sua sponte, it would seem, brought up the issue of the public's rights in the context of whether to vacate the road. Now, I think it would be a fair holding of Baldwin that the public's interests are important to consider when vacating a road, but to leap to the conclusion that Baldwin provides riparian rights to any time that a road is adjacent to the lake, I think is overstating what that case was trying to accomplish. Judge Riley, you asked what holding, if the court reaches the riparian rights issue, what holding we would propose. And the Carlsons here would propose, if the dedicator demonstrates an intent to the, if the dedicator demonstrates an intent to grant riparian rights to the public by having the street go to the water, then those rights would be granted. And that's not what we have here. We have a road that is distinct from the water. And that is the difference between this case and the Supreme Court precedent, Village of Wayzata, Bryant, Troska, et cetera.
Generally speaking, counsel, do you know how far the water is from the center point of the road at any place?
I don't know, and I don't believe there's anything in the record that shows that. I've seen pictures where there is, and I should step back, in the district court record, I believe that the testimony is that there is a narrow strip of land between the road and the lake. And I'll concede that that's not on the plat, but that is the physical property, I believe, at most times, is that there actually is some amount of land in between.
Between the right-of-way or the road itself?
Can you clarify?
Well, I'm guessing the right-of-way is probably 15 to 20 feet wide. The two-rod road would be 33 and a third feet wide, so there would be an extension of the right-of-way beyond the actual road surface.
I see. Yeah, I mean, there's the road surface, and then there's a kind of a descent into the water, is my recollection of the pictures that I've seen. But again, I don't know that there's any evidence in the record that specifically shows where the water comes to at different points in the season. Okay. If there are no further questions, I would request that the court reverse the district court and remand with instructions to grant summary judgment on count two of the Carlson's complaint. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The matter has been very well briefed and very well argued, and we will have our decision out within the 90 days.